And we are live a couple minutes early from the posted start time, but definitely later in the day than is typical of any day of the week, and specifically a Monday, because it is Monday, February the 23rd, 2026. This is episode 3804 of the Survival Podcast. And like many Mondays, I'm not going to say most, but like many Mondays, the majority of Mondays, maybe, we are going to be doing kind of a current events, look around, see what's going on show. I have today really kind of almost cut perfectly in half on bullet points, maybe one more bullet point for the blood and guts. It's going to be a kind of a two-part show. I guess even some of the good news is not necessarily good, but we're going to kind of talk about geopolitical things for the first half of the show. And the second half, we're going to look at some other things that are going on and more of a conversational tone than an informational tone. Anyway, what do I mean by that? We're going to talk about New York is expecting an epic snowstorm. I guess it's already going on. So, you know, they got a new socialist mayor who's going to fix everything and make everything wonderful. So in addition to the fact he just started raiding pension funds because the city's broke, guy's been in office for like a month and he's destroyed everything. Now they're asking people to come shovel snow with like shovels. This is I can't even begin to tell you the amount of money that New York City spends on shit every year. I used to sell to the city of New York, specifically in a telecommunications space, and in that alone, like I sold the city of New York over $1 million worth of OTDRs in 1 year. So I think they probably have some better removal equipment. But there's something a little bit funny about the snow shovel plan, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The Mexican drug cartel is burning down Puerto Vallarta and other cities in Mexico. But what's really going on? Did they just decide, like, pop off out of nowhere, like, hey, we're just going to, like, fuck the whole country up and take everything over? I mean, if they wanted to take the country over more so than they already have, they could have done it a long time ago. What's actually going on? And should we expect this to be, like, some big, giant event that propagates on the southern border and then the cartels are going to invade us with their special forces or whatever? Some of these dumb people online are really funny to listen to tell us how the cartel is not to be trifled with or whatever. And I guess if you're a small group of deer hunters, well, I think that even would take them out to a large degree. But some of their weaponry is pretty formidable. But it's like these people don't understand what U.S. military capability is. And I'm not advocating for it. I'm talking about these people saying these things. I don't even think it's even remotely going to become close to necessary. I think this is going to be very short-lived. And I'll explain to you why I think so. I haven't heard anything about it really today other than what happened yesterday. So if you miss this again, Puerto Vallarta is in flames, except it's not. It's places and parts of it, along with many other towns. And it's all because, well, the Mexican government killed a key cartel leader. In fact, the head of a specific cartel, they bumped him off. And Trump, of course, goes, we helped. Trump, maybe you should shut up until the Americans who are trapped there get out. Like, don't rub that salt in that wound just yet. But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about what's going on with Iran. The largest U.S. military naval buildup since the first Gulf War is going on right now around in and around, well, not in, all around Iran. But are we going to actually start another war? Or is this a really convincing bluff? Or is it something else? We'll talk about that a bit today. Then we're talking about the Mar-a-Lago shooting. Of course, Mar-a-Lago is Trump's Florida residence. It's a big, beautiful club. And some guy broke in there either Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember which day. He got popped. Secret Service popped the shit out of him. He had a can of gasoline and a pump shotgun, and a really long one, not like a tactical, concealable, sort of concealable, like a freaking goose hunter shotgun, and he got his ass waxed. Well, I don't have any inside information on this one. I'm going to give you what I think. This is like what Jack really kind of like thinks about what was going on there. And mental illness definitely plays a role in this. The Dutch have gone full retard, doing something that is hard to fathom being done at all anywhere, even in the EU, but taxing unrealized capital gains. But it's way worse than it sounds. I'll give you the short version of the explanation. You can dig deeper if you want to. Then we're going to turn to a new subject. I'm going to say a brief bit in memoriam of a woman who was really a light in this world named Dr. Elaine Ingham. And some of you may be like, I think I know that name. But if you're not really into the soil stuff and the permaculture stuff we talk about, it's probably because you've heard me talk about her occasionally over the years. But this woman was a rock star, and she's passed on. And I want to say some things about her, and I want to say some things that you can do if you want to remember her. And I want to say some things that's a message to all of us, because of the way this timeline worked out for Elaine. Also, last week, remember when I said solar can actually be used to improve the environment? Not because we're not putting carbon in the air or whatever, but like the panels themselves, if they're used as a design element, the shade alone could be actually an improvement, especially in places like deserts and shit. It's a great place. Environmentalists say, we're going to ruin everything. Like, do you just space them out, right, and think about the design element as an element and realize you can function stack elements? It's amazing to me what I found this morning. Just by happenstance, too. Nobody sent it to me. I just kind of sort of was bouncing around some things this morning. I'm like, oh, wow, look at that. There's exactly what I said, except this time it's not in the water, because the one I talked about last week was in the water in China. This is in the United States, and it's in the desert. Imagine that shade is useful in the desert. Who would ever thought something so crazy? Next up, we're going to talk about something going on with the MAHA movement, with RFK and Orange Man in conflict with each other. And it's over the chemical glyphosate, aka Roundup. What does it really say about our system? Like, is there a bigger story here than they disagree? And there is. Because why do they disagree is what you should be asking. And does that mean Trump wants you eating Roundup? Or is Trump, in this case, not in all cases, but in this case, is Trump being a pragmatist, at least based on what he's being told? And might he actually be being told the right things right now? I also want to talk a little bit today. We're going to wrap up with some stuff on AI. I want to talk about why it's inevitable. AI is inevitable. You're not going to stop it. You're not going to make it go back. But why both sides of the debate on it, it's horrible. It's a demon. It's going to kill the world. And the people that say it's going to cure all the cancer in 2 years, which we're 2 years into 2 years. Why both sides are off on this. And I'm going to talk about the real reason Hollywood is shitting itself about AI. And I bet it isn't what any of you guys think. I'm not going to say nobody thinks, but I bet 99% will go, oh, wow, I never even considered that angle before. And that's what I try to do, is get you guys to consider angles that you have not considered yet. The more you can do that, the more you can uncover potential reality, and the more you can prepare for whatever reality comes. With that, before I talk about our sponsors of the day, just a real quick reminder, if you want to ask me a question today or comment on something you want me to comment back on, really, really important when I'm by myself on a day like today, that you do the procedure 100% correct. Put the word comment or question or something like that in all caps, couple spaces, and then whatever you want to comment or question or whatever, and I'll probably see it, and I will probably star it. And there's an example right here from Second Life Farm, who put in a comment. And so if you do it that way, if you're in the video, I will try to answer your questions at the end of today's show. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Biltong USA. That's from Anton Van Vuren, who is a immigrant, a legal immigrant, might I add, from South Africa. And he really started making Biltong his mainstay when the COVID thing hit. So he had just opened like a small restaurant and store. Like, you could go in and buy like a little small import grocery store with like a cafe attached to it, like 2 months before COVID hit. Yeah. Well, that was great, right? Everything got shut down, even here in Texas, at least initially. He then pivoted and realized that Biltong and Biltong like products, like Biltong sticks, Drew Wars dry sausages, Calabanasi sausages, etc., shipped really well. And so he started to really focus on that part of his business. He has since gone back to doing all the things, but Biltong is still that cornerstone, you know, that flagship of the product line. Check him out today, again, at BiltongUSA.com. He does do a discount for MSB members, and it's really great stuff. It's something you're going to want to try, except I will warn you, you may find out that you become easily addicted to Anton's product line. Next up today is Above Phone. You can rise above with one of the best privacy phones, laptops, or tablets on the market with Above. We have worked with them a long time. They are a great partner. I've had the founder of the company on the show several times. But you can put privacy and freedom at your fingertips. And again, there's many devices that they offer. Again, phones is what they were originally known for. It's where they started. But now they also do laptops and tablets. I'm actually talking to you right now using my Above Book, which is the laptop. And it works as great as anything else. In fact, probably a little bit better. And that way, you know, you don't get spied on. I don't care if I get spied on right now. I'm talking to all of you guys, you know, live and broadcasting everywhere. But I prefer that not all of my stuff be spiable, right? And all my information be collectible. And if you get over to Above, you can learn how to restore your privacy at a time when there's less of it than ever before. They're also great people. And if you're worried, like, will I be able to use my new phone or laptop or whatever, they'll give you an expert that'll onboard you and walk you through it. All right, with that, let's go ahead and dig on into it. I want to start out with an admission. I uploaded a video to Facebook, and then I defended the fact that it wasn't AI, and it's my fault. We all do things that are quick without maybe double-checking like we should. But the part I uploaded it for is not AI. And that, of course, was Zohar Mandami. Mandami is, he's got a problem. And he's got a lot of problems. Basically, like all socialists, he's run out of other people's money, but he's done it really, really quick. But New York City and, in fact, you know, New Jersey, that whole area up there is being impacted with one of those really big, I'm not going to say it's a storm of the century, but it's a full-on blizzard that's hitting these guys. So they have everything out of sorts. The organization of the city is worse than it's ever been. Not that it was ever great, but it's worse. They just went through a storm, and they had shit and garbage and snow and ice in the streets for weeks longer than they should have. And I had some people try to defend that and say it's always been that way. I spent a lot of time in New York in my professional life, guys. 3 years, I was in New York City about once a month for three straight years. That's 36 trips, and that's three winters. I've never seen anything like some of the stuff that's been coming out of there. Well, now, since they have another storm coming, we're going to get ahead of it. Does that mean you're getting everything staged so you're prepared with your equipment to open the city back up as quick as you can? No. They call on regular Joes and Janes to come down to the city headquarters. They'll give you a snow shovel. I mean, a physical hand snow shovel and shovel snow. Now, the AI thing that was in the video I posted, and you guys that called me on it were right. I just was in a hurry, and I was like posting links to news stories saying this. All this really happened is they AI'd in some dude at the end that comes out and talks like a complete retard. So the retard guy in that video is not real, but everything up to that point is real. And this is the thing that's being called out, though. Mondami, the Bernie Sanderses of the world, pretty much all the left, is shrieking that if we had voter ID, it's Jim Crow 2.0. I mean, if there's anything the Democrats love, it's a very short, rhyming phrase that works on brain dead idiots, because short rhyming phrases do work on brain dead idiots, and they need brain dead idiots to believe them so that they can get their bullshit done. It's not Jim Coyne, but this is being called Jim Snow 2.0. So if you want to help, they'll pay you. And everybody keeps saying it's $30 an hour. It's not $30 an hour, and nobody's going to fucking make $30 an hour. It's just under $20 an hour. It's just under $20 an hour unless you work more than 40 hours in a week, which I got to tell you, nope, there's going to be very few people doing this anyway. It's some dumb publicity stunt that blew up in the guy's face, his third world retard face. You have to go down to the city and you have to do the following to be in this program. I want to say something in defense of the city and even Mondummy here. If the city of New York is going to cut you a paycheck, which they are, if you do this, if it's real at all, right? And what I mean by real at all is like there's actually going to be some place to go shovel and you're actually going to get paid for doing it. You have to be in their system as a contractor or an employee. So you have to have multiple forms of ID. You've got to have like a driver's license plus a social security card. Plus they want two pictures of you, passport type photos. Now, what they're going to want, and this is what people don't understand, what they want the photos for, They want the photos because you're going to get a city employee or city contractor ID card. And they don't want to take the picture for you. They want you to bring it yourself. That's why. But basically, if you're going to work in the city of New York and get a check, you have to prove that you are who you say you are. That's racist. That's against immigrants. What if a what? Wait a minute. Women aren't going to be able to do this if they're married. Because their last name won't. You see how stupid that whole argument sounds as soon as you actually look at something? The city runs the way it needs to be run because it has to do so. Of course, the city has to do this. The way their accounting software works, to cut you a check, if you're not in the system for to receive that check, you can't get the check. This is the thing. I believe these idiots would have absolutely waived this requirement, but they needed to be able to say they were going to do it, okay? And they needed to be able to say that they were going to do it right away because they some idiot somewhere in this administration went, I got an idea. And they were like, all the idiots got together and looked at the idiot idea and went, that's a good idea. You can't, they're only doing it because they can't do it any other way. Paperwork in New York City is a nightmare. This is actually pretty mild compared to what you have to do anything in New York. You should see what it takes to be to have a permit to run a hot dog or a pretzel cart in New York City, let alone like a taxi medallion, not just in cost, but all the bullshit that goes with it. And so the whole system is set up to require that you present identification to get a job with the city in New York, even if it's a short-term contract job. There's nothing wrong with that. Just the incongruency is pretty obvious. So I want to point that out. But I also want to say this again. If you live in New York City and you're suffering under this idiot, I got no sympathy. Fucking suffer. In the words of the Joker, you get what you fucking deserve. And anybody that's still living in New York City proper, if you're stuck, I understand. If you legitimately cannot get out of there, I get it. But man, I mean, there's so many people that are in New York that they're like mid-tier workers. They work at like, you know, stores and retail or something. You can get a job anywhere in the country. I'll tell you what. This has been so long coming that if you're still there, you have nobody but yourself to blame. And it isn't like the guy barely won. Right. He won in a landslide. Somebody here is asking about Bitcoin price. I'm not going to address the Bitcoin price right now. I'm not going to address it today. I'm probably not going to address it tomorrow. I'm just going to tell you that I give you one piece of advice with Bitcoin. Every day, you should try to end it with more Bitcoin than you started it with. That's it. So I'll give you that one there. I haven't really done a dedicated show dedicated to Bitcoin recently. And people are because that's because we went down. Now, I didn't. If you go back to when it was still well over 100,000, I really didn't then either. And the reason is very simple. You guys don't give a shit when I do a show about Bitcoin. I mean, I've accepted the feedback. I get maybe 10 to 20% of the audience when I do a show on Bitcoin. I've told you, I've explained it. I will do some shows on it in the future, but I'm not going to put a lot of effort into it anymore. I've given you everything you need to know. I've done it over and over. I even created the Bitcoin breakout. I have how to get started, how to manage your, I have all the things for free. Either you want to or you don't at this point, and I'm done trying to force it on people. I'm done trying to make people understand. And I said this long ago, I'm not the person to hold your hand with Bitcoin anymore. I feel like I dedicated about 9 years of my life begging you to be part of this as a movement and as an investment. And basically, the majority of you said, I don't give a shit. And that's okay. You don't have to. I'm not bitter. I'm not mad. I'm just not spinning my fucking wheels. So there's your little aside on Bitcoin today. But if you want to buy Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin. Buy it now. Buy lots of it. I'll do one thing for you on Bitcoin right now. I'll show you the only thing that you really need to know about Bitcoin, especially if you're in the live feed here. This is all you need to know. And I did cover this last week and I did show this last week. And of course, now it doesn't want to fucking work. But I'm using a tool that was built on. There we go. Okay. Now it's lighting up for me. Built on a service called Dune, D-U-N-E, Dune.com. And what this does is it monitors, because they're public, the holdings and inflows and outflows of the combined Bitcoin ETFs. All right. So that's what I'm about to show you. What I'm showing you is a graph, and that graph is Bitcoin inflows into the ETFs. In other words, what is the total holdings of all the ETFs combined? And that one that dominates everything in like the dark gray color, that's BlackRock's iBit. So BlackRock plus everybody else. And you see what happens to that graph if we go back to, let's go back to like September 1st, okay, of last year. So that's going to be right about, it's hard to do, right about there. That's a second. Yeah, right about there. So we're right about there. It's a parabolic up during the entire time that the price was dropping. The holdings of ETFs went parabolic up. What does that mean? It means that institutional money, and that's not necessarily in the form of like corporate Bitcoin treasury companies and things like that. Okay. Here, you tricked me into it. Good job, bud. You tricked me into talking about it. But when I say institutional, I mean anything outside of retail where you just buy it and hold it like on exchange or in a hard wallet or a soft wallet. Is here and it's here to stay. And what you now have are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that are buying a small amount of Bitcoin every month on autopilot that never were before in the form of 401ks and IRAs. And that's only going to grow. And there's only so much of the pie. And as more and more of the pie goes away, every single indicator, every single metric, every single reason for the case behind Bitcoin in the first place gets stronger. Right. So do what you want. Do what you want with that information. Continue to hold your breath or buy it. But if you want me to tell you when to buy it, or like what's the floor, what's the high, when is it going to do what? I've never done that, never claimed I could. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the Mexican drug cartel. This is something I think really is not well understood, because I don't think anybody's even asking about it. But the Mexican drug cartels, and specifically one cartel in particular, which is the CGNJ drug cartel in Jalisco, New Generation drug cartel. They have a guy known as El Mencho, M-E-N-C-H-O, El Mencho. He died on Sunday when he was being taken to the capital city of Mexico. Gotta love the way the BBC writes here, right? After being seriously injured in clashes between his supporters and the army. His supporters and the army. He sounds like he's a freaking guy running for mayor. This dude is a former police officer, by the way. He is the head of a massive and extremely violent cartel in Mexico. He was like, his location was identified by the Mexican military and the Mexican government with assistance by the United States, because Trump has put that out, that we helped them. Like, this is where he is. Go get him. And they got in a conflict, and in the ensuing conflict, he was killed. So the cartel decided they're going to throw a fit. But I'm going to say that for an organization with the reputation of the cartels in Mexico, this is kind of a unique fit. Before I explain what I think is going to happen and why I think it's going to happen, I want to show you something that I'm betting most of you have not seen, and I bet you it's not on Fox News and what have you. Now, it's got some horrible music blended into it, because this video is sort of like a security camera, so it has no audio. So I'm going to manually move it and talk about it, because it's really going to be obnoxious for the people on audio only, which is the vast majority of people. If I actually play it with just that music, you'll have no idea what's going on. So I want you to just kind of watch this. There's a couple people pumping gas at a gas station. And as they're pumping gas, this vehicle rolls up and these cartel guys come out of it. And these guys are armed to the teeth. They look like paramilitary operators. Okay. These look like guys working for BlackRock or something. Guns drawn, moving in. Okay. Now they're the cartel. So you think what they would do here, since you're going to see what they're going to start a fire, they would just burn everything to shit, right? Including the people in their car or whatever. Or you think that they're going to like maybe jerk this guy out of his car. Watch what actually happens here. This is interesting to me because it's the cartel. So they get up here and they get in this guy's face. This other goon comes up behind him and points And basically, it looks like the guy that has the gun drawn down on the driver is telling him to get out of the car or something like that. The guy in the back, who is clearly in charge, tells him something else. He pushes the guy to the side, kind of not pushes, but kind of guides him to the side, and then tells the people in the car, get the fuck out of here. Get out of here. Now, I can't tell you that's exactly his words, right? I'm just judging what happens, because watch what happens next. The guy drives away, and now the guy that seemed to be in charge, he pulls out the gas, and so does the guy on the other side. They're spraying gas all over the fucking place, on the ground, on both sides of the gas pump, and then eventually they light the whole fucking thing on fire and walk away. Now, don't mistake anything I'm about to say as being like an apologist for these drug cartel members. I'm just telling you, the TV's not going to show you that. The TV's not going to show you that. There's nothing that stopped those guys from shooting everybody. There's nothing that stopped those guys from stealing that dude's car. They were following a plan with a reasonable, for who they are, a reasonable degree of discipline in that plan. This guy here, it's not a guy, it's Lee Murphy from Jacksonville, says, I saw that earlier. They seem so nonchalant. Yes, they do. You know what that is, though? Those guys probably are like former Mexican military, or maybe from some other Central American military that moved into Mexico as part of this cartel. That is people operating in what's known as a parasympathetic state. That's how your Navy SEALs operate. That's how just good professional soldiers operate. People always think that these warriors, like, you know, rage when they're in there, right? Like, but you can't be precise and you can't get things done when you're in a rage. That's how criminals usually fuck up and get caught. It's discipline that allows a criminal enterprise to stay an enterprise. They are doing something, and this is all my opinion. I don't have facts on this. I always try to be clear on that. They're throwing a tantrum, and they're notifying the Mexican government of how much they can fuck up and how fast they can do it if they're interfered with. You killed our guy. And it's not that everyone, Puerto Vallarta, that's because people go there from America and vacation there, right? And that's because it is a vacation place, and there's all these tourists, and they're like, oh my God, now we got to make people care, so we'll talk about where they are. But there's several cities in Mexico that this shit's going on. I think it's already pretty much winding down, though. I don't know that. But it's also clear that they didn't try to lay waste to everything. It does look like they blocked off road. Again, I'm not making excuses for them or saying what nice guys they are. It's not what I'm doing here. I'm just telling you what they did. It's important. If you want to understand what's going on, you have to be accurate about what they're doing. And that's what I think they're doing. I think this is a form of violent extortion. And they're trying not to go full scorched earth. I'll tell you something else, though, that I found really odd. These resorts in Mexico are used to having hundreds, thousands of people at them. Most of them have hospitality on site. Many of them are all inclusive. Stories are coming out that they're already, they called us to the lobby to give us the last bits of food they had. Okay, maybe that's a restaurant without a restaurant or a hotel without a restaurant. I don't know. This happened Sunday. It's Monday. How are the fuck you out of everything? And what, half a day? It doesn't make any sense. Unless, I guess, maybe the weekend is Sunday is when they run out and they restock on Monday because it's slow. I don't know, but I'll tell you what. If you're going to be traveling anywhere, you might want to think about having a little bit more preparedness in your travel from things that you don't normally think you need, like extra food. I mean, I always try to take snacks and shit like that because you never know where you're going to get stuck or for how long. But for the love of God, you would think that a hotel with a restaurant could feed people for a fucking week anyway. They couldn't do it for half a day. Where are they getting all their shit from? I don't know. Just think about that the next time that you travel. Next up, let's talk about the big story. And there's a lot of this big story that we don't know what's going to happen. I will, after I kind of go through what's going on, tell you what I think's going to happen. But I want to focus more on what Iran is doing here. What is Iran's strategy? They're crazy. They're religious nutbags. I don't know if they're crazy. They are religious nutbags. I'll agree with you. It doesn't mean they don't have a strategy. It doesn't mean that they don't think. It doesn't mean they don't know how to play fucking chess. So I want to start out with what I'll tell you about Iran. And whatever is going on, whatever they're doing that we say they're doing, and whatever they're not doing that we're saying, it doesn't, irrelevant. Iran's a different form of government than we are, with a great deal. I'm going to give a word here. It's going to sound like praise. It's not. A great deal more consistency than the United States. You can't tell me that we're not living in a completely different country than we were 2 years ago. Border security alone, and the change of a president made that level of change. It doesn't matter if you think that change is good or bad. It only matters that that change is that significant. Foreign policy is completely different. Trade policy is completely different. We didn't have some major upset in the government. The Republicans didn't take a supermajority in both houses of Congress. All right? It's one man made that change. One man and his main administration drastically changed United States policy, domestic and foreign. If you can't agree with that, again, because you don't have to be for it or against it. You can be either or neutral. We're only stating it's amazing to me how people get all wound up in the ass about this. You're giving Trump credit. I'm observing. I'm observing the reality. It's a different nation. And it only took one election. This is Iran's strategy. Whatever's going on, if you think you would rather negotiate with the next United States government, just stall and hold out, because it will change. And in my lifetime, the longest that one side has held power in the White House was 12 years. And that was Reagan and Bush the second. Or Bush the first. The longest one side has ever held power, I believe, is the Democrats, with four elections of FDR and then one of Truman after the fact, right? So that's five terms that the Democrats held the presidency. I don't think any party's held on to the White House for longer than that. And so if you're Iran or any country and you think you can last till the end of an administration, then that's what you do. Even if the other side holds, if you don't think there was a difference between Reagan and Bush the first, you're just delusional, or you weren't born yet and you believe what somebody else told you. So I think Iran here is trying to just hold on, but yet they're also acknowledging some reality. I'm not going to read this article to you I've got up, but if you read the article, the head Ayatollah, the head lunatic, right? And I always said they're not lunatic; they are religious lunatics. Has stated that he has pre-named four people in line of succession to him. So in the United States, if the president gets off, the vice president takes over. If somebody pops the president and vice president at the same time, the Speaker of the House takes over. There's a whole succession based on office, not person, in this country. We're a republic. We're supposed to be anywhere. We're supposed to be a constitutional republic in the form of a representative democracy. In other nations, it doesn't always work that way. And so there can be ambiguity when somebody gets knocked off who takes over. He has also ordered a huge number of people by name and position in his government to do the same, including key military officials. So I guess even their military, who exactly would be in command of this division of the military is, guess to them, not clear. So he has put that edict out that everybody over there is supposed to do this. What this signals to me is Iran believes 100% that we're going to blow the shit out of our country. Now, depending on this, I'm going to take everything I believe that should happen off the table right now. Nothing I say is an advocation for anything. I'm speaking at this from a strategic analyst view only, dispassionate. It's not important to me whether I'm right or wrong here, other than I'm trying my best to look at the situation. For the United States, that can be good and or bad. It can be good because if they really believe we're going to do it, It definitely allows for more leverage on negotiation. However, if they believe it's going to happen no matter what, then what incentive is there really to negotiate? So Trump's trying to play this madman game and walk this line to the point where they completely believe it, but they still believe there's a way out, a way to hold power. This I'm going to tell you is why. The United States is not trying to free the people of Iran, no matter how many times the TV tells you that, the idiots in government tell you that, or whatever. If they wanted to do that without any fanfare, without any warning, they would have strategically taken these fucking people out a long time ago. Again, I'm not saying we should do it. I'm just saying if we wanted to do that, we know who all these people are. We have eyes on them all the time. We know when they're all mostly in the same place. We do not fear war with Iran. We might, some of our people might, but our government does not fear war with Iran. And what they could have done long ago is just nuked every, not real nukes, right? But nuked the shit out of these people and then said, hey, stand your government up. The reality is they know this is so hard for some people to affect. Right now, if you completely unseated the government of Iran and they ran open free elections, you would still end up with a state that looks a lot like it does today, with new ayatollahs. The people have chosen this. You don't control a nation that size of that many people with the things that they're controlled with if the majority's not on your side. If you look at the last, how do I know this? How about the, how do you know? How do you know? You can't know that. Well, I can look at the last election, and I can tell you the people that were running in the last election for president and other positions, because Iran has, it's like a blended theocracy. It has a democratically elected government, and it has a theocratic government, and they both have roles. So you do get, if you're an Iranian citizen, you get a say on one side. All of the reform candidates lost. Lost. And people say, well, that's because they're afraid. No, no. They can vote however they want. The government doesn't even give a fuck because the theocratic side of the government has the real levers of power. The democratic side of government isn't quite as inept as about what I'm going to say, but it's, think of it this way. Think of like student government in high school. If I'm your class president, I'm going to blow. You're not going to do fucking anything. You have no power. So imagine the class government in high school had a little bit of power. But you would still, if you were then in school and you believed in, you know, your school, you would vote for the people that were most in line with what you wanted. They did not pick the reformers. They didn't necessarily pick the hardliners either. They picked kind of the between the middle and the hardliners, like in that, like closer to the hardliner than the center in most instances. So we don't want to free the country. The country is not capable of being free in the way the mind of the American thinks of it being free, because we believe you have a right to self-determination as long as you determine what we want you to. That's our foreign policy. But Iran simply thinks if it can wait this out, but can they? And I think Trump's goal here is to convince them, no, you can't. And I would tell you that my gut is it is more likely than not there is a major military strike on Iran within 60 days. More likely than not. Significantly so. To the tune of like 70 to 75% more likely than not. I know I'm still hedging there, but anything could happen. If the Iranians come out and say, tell us what to do. Whatever, it's going to be very difficult politically for our government to go forward and prosecute a military conflict with them. But they can't. The Iranian state is run on fear and strongman. And the people of that country, by and large, not all, because I know people there and they want freedom as much. Yeah, that's always, it's about the majority, right? And in this case, kind of a supermajority. They want a strong man in charge, but they don't respect weakness. And it's the kind of state where if you look weak, you don't get voted out of office. You get hung from a light post in the street and replaced with another strong man. So they have to look like they're standing up to America, but they have to walk this line and try to comply at the same time. And they also want to not give up their ability to do whatever it is they want to do long term, because they know one election and everything changes. And they also probably figure by next year, we're going to have significant Democrat majorities in the Senate and the House. And at that point, Trump's going to have a lot of problems. You want the other side of it before we move on? So that just speeds up the timetable on the Trump side, doesn't it? This is going to be one of those things, like wars and rumors of wars is what I call today's show. Yeah, that's where you are with this, right? And I'm not invoking anything biblical with that other than it makes it a good title of a show. There is no real way to unearth this one until it plays out. Now, I will also tell you that the Iranian military is not the Journey Varsity, and they're fought. They can't do shit. They made a big thing. Russia just gave them a bunch of anti-aircraft systems, and they're going to revive. Well, first of all, they have to deploy it, right? And they have to get everybody trained on it, and they have to know how to use it. And second of all, the Venezuelans had that same shit, and it didn't work for them. And this would be a much larger operation with far less precision required. Like, you don't have to land a helicopter and pull somebody out of their bed. I don't think we're gonna abduct all the Ayatollahs or anything like that. Anyway, I'd like to know what you guys think is gonna happen. Just if you're in the live stream today, just put we will strike or we will not strike. I'd like to kind of pull the audience with that, and I'm gonna move on at this point in the topics today. But you guys go ahead and answer that for me, and we'll see what we can do. So I also want to talk about this guy that got shot at Mar-a-Lago. And I'm pretty sure that the Fox always required video will start autoplaying here in a second. I'll have to shut it down when it does. But I want you guys to see this picture right here. Let me switch over to this tab right here. This is the shotgun the guy had. So it's definitely not, it's black, and that led some of the news people to call it tactical. But if you are a gun person, you would laugh at anybody that would refer to that shotgun right there as tactical, wouldn't you? I mean, that is not just because it's got a black stock. This is a full length barrel. Looks like a Remington to me. I can't really tell because the picture is not clear or that big. It could be a Mozzie, I guess. I'm not really sure, but it's a shotgun. It is something like somebody would buy to go hunt pheasants and shit with. And so this guy breaks in, and that's what he has. Now, Mar-a-Lago is one of the best secured facilities on the planet. It's incredibly well secured. It was very secure before Trump was president. Now it's got Secret Service climbing up its ass. It's additionally secured by county sheriff deputies as well. It is difficult to get into Mar-a-Lago. Somehow he managed to at least get in the gate. He didn't get very far. I think the – I don't know if I have to watch the video or if they have it here. He was killed very close to the gate that he was able to get into. Yeah, there it is right there. So – you could see, if you're looking at this, you see where this word North Gate is, and then Mar-a-Lago here. He was found dead, like, right up there where that arrow points off that North Gate sign. He never got really near the house. That is a bigger distance than it looks like, because it is a very large property. It's, you know, it's not 1,000 acres or nothing, but it's a pretty big chunk of land. That is not what a person who wants to assassinate a president does. Right? That is not what someone who wants to assassinate a president of the United States does. If you want to assassinate a president, then you try to use some level. Looks like most people think we're going to strike Iran. That's interesting to me. But if you wanted to assassinate anybody, then you try to use some level of stealth. Like, even if you're a complete idiot, like the guy that got caught at the golf course. He was hiding in the biggest thing made him an idiot is he had like a duct taped on scope and shit, but he tried to hide And then the kid that actually got some shots off up on the roof, that got his head blown off by Secret Service, he really didn't do a good job of hiding. They should have spotted him, but he at least tried. This guy walks in with a shotgun in one hand and a gas can in the other hand. I don't know what he was thinking. I think this person was mentally incompetent. And I think he did not intend on living. I think he just wanted to burn the place down. And he figured he'd probably get killed, but his shotgun, his magic shotgun, was going to protect him long enough to get to the house and set it on fire. That's the only thing I could figure. Because Trump wasn't there. And Trump's overall macro schedule is public. And so anybody that actually wanted to get to him would have been able to know when he was going to be there, at least to a degree. In this case, you would absolutely know he wasn't there. So I don't think this is a third assassination attempt, as it's being called. And of course, the Republicans in government will say that because it behooves them to, and the Democrats will ignore it because it doesn't help them in any way to say anything at all about it. But I just think the guy was mentally ill, and he was all jazzed up, and he thought he was going to burn down Mar-a-Lago. And apparently he was in North Carolina. He drove down, and he bought the shotgun on the drive down. This makes me think, I haven't confirmed this, but I would venture to guess, if it was a legal purchase, he bought the shotgun before he left the state of North Carolina. Some places will sell you a gun without a state license. I don't think you're supposed to. I don't think you're supposed to do that. Maybe there's some paperwork you can do or whatever, but I think the transfer is supposed to happen in your state of your residency. It's never been a thing I had to worry about, so I've never really dug into that. But it doesn't seem like this was well thought out at all. Not at all in any way. All right, I got another one for you. This one is one of those things that you just, if you understand economics at all, you would have never expected any government to do this, but yet they have. The Dutch government has just approved a 36% tax on unrealized crypto stock and bond gains. What is an unrealized gain for those that don't know? So let's say you buy, let's say when Bitcoin was $50,000, you bought one Bitcoin. And it didn't happen this way. But let's say that you bought a Bitcoin for $50,000 last year, and it ended up at exactly $100,000 on January 31st, at close of the day at midnight, when it went over to, or I'm sorry, December 31st, but went over to the new year, you ended the year with $100,000 Bitcoin. Yeah. You would have to give them 36%, which is $18,000 of, no, yeah, yeah, 36% of the $50,000 gain, $18,000. But where do you get the money? Where do you get the money? There's only one place to get the money. You have to sell it. You have to sell, and then you're going to make another profit. You're going to pay tax on the next tax year on top of the unrealized. You're actually going to end up with no real gain by the time it's all said and done, because you're going to pay the additional tax when you liquidate. You're going to have to liquidate at the exact right time in the same year. They're going to force the gain on you. So you're going to reduce your assets. Of course, this is being marketed by the Dutch government. Well, we didn't really want to do this, but we had to. Really, you're the government. You didn't want to do it that way. They want you to do what you want to do. But what they're saying is this is good. At least these billionaires, you know, their net worth goes up $300 million in a year, and then they pay their fair share. It doesn't affect them. If you own more than 5% of a company and the value of that company and the company's assets increase in that tax year, you're exempt. If you own real estate, not REITs, but actual real estate as a landlord, it also does not pertain to you. So if this happened in the United States, for instance, when the value of Trump's hotels goes up with a property assessment, he wouldn't pay tax on that. Or if you are the owner, like if you are Elon Musk and you own X and you own, you know, space SpaceX and you own the Boring Company. When those companies, their equity value goes up, or Jeff Bezos, you don't pay it. So this just fucks the middle class to the affluent level investors that are holding stocks and bonds and shit for their retirement. Now, this is, yeah, and you can, and this is a very astute thing, but you got to think this through, man. Zip here says 36% tax break on unrealized losses. And that is the truth. You can take the loss that you didn't realize, but then you're going to reset your basis. And then when it goes up the next year, you're going to pay it on that. There's no way that you win in this. This is one of the most, and the people that cheered for it are the middle class retards in the Netherlands, just like they are here. They don't realize yet how that. Wait till they figure this out. There might be some real violence over this eventually. There's a bigger problem here, though. There is now a place to say somebody did it. I don't see this happening in the United States because I really do think that people will get killed. I mean, I really do. I think if you want to see people drug out in the streets, pull this shit, U.S. government, go ahead. But this could cascade to other more socialist countries like the UK, like Canada, etc. There was a pretty big dip in the pre-market opens over this because it is going to require liquidation of assets. And this is the other thing. If you end up with the tax bill and you don't sell in the tax year, it's possible that the asset has already declined in value versus what you can get for it. You see what I mean? And so now you have to sell more of it than you otherwise would have if you had just been taxed at the end of the year by taking the asset from you. This also is going to, like, since tax years end uniformly for everybody, you have this glut of a dump of assets being artificially created every year, but at least it's a relatively small country. But let countries the size of the United Kingdom do this. And what's the global impact? And this is something that there's a lot of very socialist-minded politicians have wanted to do this forever. They have wanted to tax non-income as though it were income. This doesn't make any sense at all. How have I profited from this? And the answer is I haven't. And when you start looking at what the – because let's look at it a different way. And then you realize how stupid it is. I can do an unrealized loss with this. Now, it's one thing if I actually trade the asset to capture it. Okay, fine. But let's say that I bought Bitcoin last year for $100,000. And let's say it had ended the year at 50. And I say I lost $50,000. I'm still holding one Bitcoin. Now I say I'm going to deduct all this from my taxes. Right? Okay. But now I have reset the basis to $50,000. And when it goes back up to 100, I owe tax on another $50,000 that I didn't make. This is asinine. Now, there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity here. Don't worry about – somebody's asking about what if you go into a shitcoin offset? Don't worry about all that shit. You don't worry about shitcoins. This is not even about Bitcoin. It just includes crypto assets. This is, to be clear, this is you bought Exxon. Then you bought Exxon. This is you bought an ETF. This is you bought a REIT, which is basically a bond that it's used to raise money. It's a bond fund where the money is used by real estate investors, and then you're paid a percentage on your money as an ROI. This is not anything like that. This is on anything like that. This is on any fungible liquid asset that you could put a price on and sell, and the market sets a price for it. This is shares of Ford Motor Company or, you know, Dutch Cheese Company or whatever the fuck they do in the Netherlands, right? You know, Bill's Windmill LLC or whatever. That's anything you own like that. If its value went up that year, they tax you on it at 36%. This is a wealth tax, but it's not on the wealthy. It's on the middle class and the upper middle class. Because giant wealthy billionaires can just structure, even if they're not already structured around it, they can just move structure now and structure around it. You just move your assets into a holding company and then you own the company. See how that works? You have to own another 5% of the company. This is really, really not a good thing for the world. It really isn't. Anyway, let's move on from there. I just wanted you guys to be aware of it, and I want you to know that it is going to have an impact. We're going to turn the corner now. We're going to talk about things that are not, I guess, the blood and guts would be the way to put it, though we already talked about AI some. And some of you feel that way about that. But I want to start out with a sad thing, but yet a celebration of life. Dr. Elaine Ingham, who is one of the most brilliant soil scientists to ever live, passed away over the weekend. She's a wonderful person. And above all, if you ask me to describe Elaine as a person, not as a scientist, the first word I would come up with is brilliant. Okay. As a person, as a woman, kind. The first word I would use to describe Elaine, having met her a couple times, is kind. And not kind to Jack Spirko, the podcaster that you know the name of. Kind to every person that I saw her speak to. Incredibly kind. Like when I say kind, I mean where you can feel that this person cares about other people. She was a wonderful, wonderful woman and a brilliant scientist. And if you have learned anything from me over the years about soil and soil science and the carbon cycle and permaculture and all, you've learned some of that because of Elaine. I wouldn't call her my biggest mentor. That would be Jeff Lawton. That would absolutely be Jeff Lawton. Probably Jeff Lawton, Ray Artelica, and Gabe Brown, and Bill Mollison. Elaine will probably come in somewhere in the top 10, though. But the things that she was a specialist in, she could explain in a way that anybody could understand. And that made, you know, the person with the PhD and all the initials after the name, and the person was brilliant with chemistry, and the person was brilliant with a microscope, an actual expert. Because being able to do all that shit doesn't matter to me if you can't explain it to somebody that doesn't already know it. If you can't explain it to someone that just wants to make their garden better in their backyard so that they understand it, you're not an expert. You just know a lot of shit. There's a big difference there. She was an expert, not just at her field, but as a teacher and a mentor. And she is now gone. What I wanted to say is she only retired last fall. And now she's passed. She had about, I think, 7 months between retirement and passing. And when I look at that, that's exactly what I don't want for people in my community and my audience. I want people to have real golden years. And she was 73, and she may not have worked that hard in the end until she officially retired. And she may have just enjoyed it. I feel like she did. But there's just something about seeing somebody retire and less than a year later be gone that makes you feel like all those things that you planned that you would do someday, you never got to do. And so I have a few things to kind of charge you up with on that and get you thinking about. One is you need to be building your life so that you can retire at an age where you can still do the things. Whatever retire means to you. The reason I take that retirement date seriously is because she announced it. She made it formal. So that must have been what retirement was for her. So I, you know, someday I may retire, and that might mean I do 2 shows a week because I like to do this. And when you retire, you do things you like to do, but I won't work at it the way that I do now. Right. So whatever that is for you, I want you to get there at a point where you still can do the things. But the other thing is, I don't want you to wait till then to do a lot of the things. At some point, as you reach a level of stability economically, don't be afraid to take some of that income every year and put it to things that you want to do, going to places that you want to go to, seeing the things that you want to go see, because you don't know how long you're going to get. you don't know that you might not retire in November and be gone by February. And that actually might be closer to the timeline. I don't remember exactly when, but sometime last fall, she could have been 4 months, 4 or 5 months. I think that's about right. That just doesn't seem to be a good deal. And Elaine left behind what she wanted people to do in her memoriam. And you can read the article and it'll talk about where you can donate some money if you want to. But what she really wanted was the same thing Bill Mollison did. Plant a tree for her. Plant a tree and just think when you plant it, that's for Elaine. And what I said is, I will not plant a tree for her. I will plant trees for her. Plural. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And I'm going to move on. Now I want to talk about something a little bit happier, because that was supposed to be the switch to Out of the Blood and Guts. And it's kind of sad. And it does make me sad that I'll never see her again. I didn't meet her a lot of times. I met her twice. But I guess in my head, I always thought we would cross paths at another conference somewhere and I'd get to meet her one more time, because she really was the person who, the first time I heard her talk about soil, it changed the way I looked at it. I was a good gardener, good grower, good composter, all into the mulch and everything else. She made that soil food web way more important to me. And I went from just saying the things and doing the things, but to actually understanding the things and being able to teach them at a higher level. So the fact that I won't get to see her again, it hurts a little bit. All right, moving on though. Let's talk about some good environmental news. So this is really interesting. So, this is plant species near extinction, mysteriously rebounded and is now thriving after a solar power project was installed. A rare desert plant in Nevada called the three-corner milk vetch increased from just 12 known plants to 93 after a large solar project was built nearby. Rather than clearing everything away, the project was designed in a way that allowed the plant not only to survive, but to grow in greater numbers than before. At the Gemini Solar Project near Las Vegas in the Mojave Desert, surveys tracked three-corner milk vetch, a small, low-growing desert wildflower in the pea family, before construction and again later. Using those maps, ecologist Tiffany Pierretta and the Desert Research Institute traced the increase across panel rows. Pierre's paper reported that 12 three-corner milk vetch plants before construction, then 93 after the facility started running in 2024. The rise came from an approach that left soil and seed intact, not from adding irrigation or moving plants in. All right, so there's more on it if you want to read it, but it comes right down to what you would expect. This line of panels casts a shadow. The shadow, of course, is cooler than the surrounding area, but it lowers evaporation, and just a small difference, the amount of moisture in the soil, is a big deal in a desert. And then, of course, this plant was able to regrow. Now, I want to be, it's all right, Aaron. It'll be fine. Anyway, when I talked about this last week, what I said is they had these solar farms in China in lakes, and people said they were floating. They weren't floating. They were anchored into the shallower part of the lake, and then they were elevated above the water, and that shade would actually be structure, including the foundations as well for fish. And I have seen a lot of these solar farms, and I've thought over and over and over again that if we look at this as what it actually, and this is, I guess, a whole new look at permaculture, regenerative agriculture, lifestyle, all things design oriented when you get into the outdoor spaces, right? Everything that you use is a design element. And we don't look at things as an element first and a thing second, I guess. In other words, when we look at it as a design element, we are required by that process to say, and what else does it do? Because what does a solar panel do? It intercepts solar radiation and converts it to electrical energy and transmits it across copper to wherever we want it to go, and either powers something or charges a battery that then later powers something, right? That's what it is. And when we look at solar, That's what people look at. That's all that it is. But what else is it? When you're installing it on a significant scale, it's a roof of an open-sided structure. That's the best way to think of it. It could be a low structure, a medium structure, or a very tall structure. It is an open-sided structure with a roof that's either flat or on an angle. As soon as you look at it that way, the whole nonsense and twaddle about it just destroys all the ecosystems just goes away. There is no place where you don't create microclimates when you add a open-sided covered structure. Doesn't exist. Once you look at it that way, it also allows you to then say, well, instead of putting them as close together as we can, what is the right distance for the other things we want to do with this? What else happens when you put a roof anywhere? And the answer is, in addition to the shade, you also put what in place? An impermeable barrier for water, a roof. So when you have thousands of square feet of impermeable barrier, you have an opportunity to do what? Water catchment. And that means that you can then bank water instead of just in the soil. You can bank it in something like a catchment tank, and you could drip irrigate strategically from that tank and make the effect of the limited rainfall you get in a low rainfall environment work better over time. Now, this is desert. This is Nevada desert. And I think a lot of people who have never actually been to the American Southwest desert, you don't have any appreciation for how extreme that environment and how dry that environment and how desolate that environment can be. So when you find any place in it that things are growing and then you can enhance that like you see here, it's a big deal. If we were to move this to a semi-arid climate, right, instead of being out here in this desert, if we could move that to a semi-arid climate, something that gets more in the order of 20 inches of rain a year, what you could do with this system, now you're producing electricity, but you're also producing food, plus you're also producing wildlife habitat. There's a lot of ways to do this, and I tire of people on the right as much as I tire of people on the left, especially when it comes to environmentalism. You have these two camps of like extreme retardation. Just can't, neither side, like, it doesn't work, it doesn't do anything, all it does is wait, shut up, and like, we could power everything with it. No. Like, both sides are just idiotic, but the way you make, a lot of times, the way you make a thing work that almost does what you need but doesn't quite, you add to it. You function stack it. If you're going to mine Bitcoin, do something with the heat. That would just be another example. If you're going to make biochar, if you can figure out how to harness and do something with the heat becomes a benefit, not just a byproduct. It becomes a co-product. Yeah? Like, everything you look at, like, when you put in a pergola, can it also be a trellis? And of course it can, if you design it properly. And I think we need to be doing way more effort on making these types of things happen. But it is interesting that I told you guys a week ago that the shade from solar can be used to enhance, you know, native habitat and make it better for the species that live there. And a week later, without even really trying, boom, it just shows up. So how many places has that already happened? How many places has it happened and some idiot's going through there with a weed eater once a week because he thinks it's bad for that plant to be growing? Who knows? All right, next up, this is going to be another one where people are going to misunderstand what I'm saying. So please don't. I'm doing an analysis here. This is not about what I think should be done or what I want to be done. But Politico has a story out today. MAHA, that's Make America Healthy Again, unleashes on White House after Trump backs pesticide. Well, it's really an herbicide. This is all about Roundup. President Donald Trump's Wednesday night executive order promoting the production of a widely used herbicide is threatening to blow up a coalition that played a key role in his 2024 election victory Make America Healthy Again activists brought into the Republican fold by Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are furious over Trump's move to ensure adequate supplies of herbicide glyphosate, a prime target for their efforts to crack down on toxic chemicals that they argue is killing Americans. All right, so I want to explain something that you always have to look deeper, and this has nothing to do with Trump from my angle on it, and it has nothing to do with saying that Maha is wrong about this. It has to do with one of my laws of life. The way things are is more important than the way things should be. Okay? The way things are is what's really important. We have to operate in the world of reality. There's a lot of things I want to get rid of. And if you said, Jack, if you push this button, it will set a process in motion that will eliminate it. I'll push the button. I'll jump on the button. I'll get a hammer and hit the button. I'll make more buttons and push them all at the same time. I'll hold my tongue a special. I'll do anything I can to make that happen. Okay? If the process makes sense. So what would happen? See, I want you to think about this from a different angle. If you're going to struggle with this, another environmental angle. One, a group of people that most people that listen to this show would immediately write off as being retardants, right? And that's the ban oil people, right? The just ban oil to get rid of, there's a name for like the biggest group of them, like oil, get rid of oil, right? And they don't mean phase oil out. What they're actually advocating for is if they could do it, if they could push a button, and it wouldn't be a 20-year process that replaced oil with other forms of energy. If it was you pushed a button and tomorrow it was illegal to pump and burn and refine petroleum, they would push that button. And a person with a brain looks at that and goes, no matter what they feel about global warming and pollution and the oil industry and everything else, they go, whoa, hold on. I didn't say I wanted billions of people dead. I didn't say I wanted a global catastrophe. I said this is a pollution source, and it has some consequences we're maybe not clear on yet. We should try to use less of it, and if possible, replace it. Yeah, that's the same environmentalist. Even if you disagree, it's the same position. The person that says just pull the plug, no more oil, just stop oil. That's what it's called, just stop oil, right? Those people. Right. So you know they're nuts. You understand that they're freaking crazy. How about just stop Roundup? Do you think it's that easy? Do you understand anything about the agricultural system in the United States? Anything? Do you understand how many fields have been soaked with this shit for so long? You have to grow the genetically stacked, mutated, you know, GMO crops on that field for the foreseeable future because of what other herbicides have also been used in that field. In other words, the agricultural system, sorry about that, guys, the agricultural system of the United States of America is a giant, 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 giant ship. It cannot be turned on a dime. Well, if you think of the Blackbird, right, the SR-71 Blackbird, when they originally, like that's a reconnaissance plane is what it did for most of its career. When they originally designed the Blackbird, it was supposed to be the fastest fighter plane ever built. That's what its original idea was. It was going to be this freaking fighter jet, bomber, something that was going to be able to move at speeds no one could even think of. And you go in and just blow shit up and be gone before anybody saw it. The problem was because of what they had to do to make it go that fast, especially it's very impressive the time in history when it was done, right? When that giant leap was made. It took miles to just turn around. Like, okay, we have a really great, fast, high-flying, amazing aircraft, but everybody at the Skunk Works had to look at each other and go, yeah, it's not a fighter craft. Like, it just... it doesn't work that way. So they took it and used it as it was designed to be used. The agricultural system in the United States has a tremendous amount of that, you know, high-speed inertia behind it. And you can't – and then you also have a lot of farming that's now being done almost 100% mechanized. Like, people touch almost nothing. I mean, they literally have, like, giant pieces of equipment, like combines and plows and shit. The guy just starts with a remote and watches it. And the machinery does all the work. And that's become more and more the case. And even when people are driving them, they're kind of still GPS guided at this point. And it's just up and down these giant rows. And Jack, I thought you were against all of that. And you think it's terrible. I do. And I think we need a huge transition. But I also know how everybody's fed today. And I know that there is a gap between the world that I would envision and the world we have. And I know what I envision has always and will always exist, at least in small components. And my goal is to grow it. I do not want to flip a switch that means somebody's kids will be starving by fall. And as fucked up as it is, as terrible as it is, this fucking poison feeds people right now. Now, it feeds them poison-laced food, and I want people off that food. But when you're the president, you have to take everybody into account. And I guarantee you there's people that have explained this to the orange man, and it's a business decision at that point, right? It's a numbers decision. Yes, this shit's bad, but if I don't make sure we have enough of it, the consequences can be worse. And so the question is, how do we get off of something like that? And I don't have a good answer. My only answer is to continue to grow the alternative. And the number one alternative we need to be expanding is the production of meat. The production of meat and meat systems that work integrated with perennial production systems. In other words, if we're growing apples, cattle should be grazing in between the rows. And if we're growing corn, we probably should plant some apple trees and buy some cows. This is an easy thing to describe, and we know just what to do, but to actually do it, especially on land that's already owned and mortgaged to the teeth, on what's left of a family farm, and the family's trying to hold on to the land, is not easy to do. So I think this is a point where optimism has bounced into pragmatism. And the types of changes that RFK has made are some of the best that have been made. But they're also running into reality. It's kind of like looking at Doge and then trying to actually, like, everybody agrees this is stupid. We shouldn't spend this money this way. But we can't. We still have to do it. Now, actually, we could actually stop spending that money. I talked about this years ago. The transition to all natural farming is not something that can be done in a season. I don't know that if we all got on board, if it became like Kennedy's moonshot, to where like little kids were going around and doing fundraisers from school to help to that level, I don't know if we could do it in 10 years. I think we could do a lot in 10 years. I think the transformation in 10 years would be amazing, but it wouldn't be done yet. It wouldn't be done yet. And most people raising livestock, even the ones that are doing pasture and stuff like that, are still relying on a significant amount of grain to do it. And in some cases, that's not totally wrong to be doing. I think pork in general, monogastric animals like pigs, like it actually makes a lot of sense to use some grain, at least in their finishing. And you can say whatever you want about it. We should do all cow, all beef, grass fed and all. There is a valid way, especially if we had clean grain, to use grain at the end of the finishing of a beef. It doesn't have to be, but there is a way to do it that's far more responsible and far more effective. And there is a difference in flavor. And some people really do prefer the flavor of well-raised beef that does have some grain in its diet. And the whole omega-6, omega-3 thing, that's, you're getting very nitpicky. Even Ken Berry will tell you, you'd be better off eating nothing but CAFO beef than eating the standard American diet. And I agree with that. So I just think reality has met up against optimism here. And the way things are is different than the way things should be. Next up, AI. I want to talk about some things with AI and why we all need to accept this reality. AI is going to be involved in your life for the rest of your life. It's going to be in your kid's life, and it's going to be in your grandkids' life. The only way that that's not true is if we have some sort of catastrophic thing that blows up the grid or something like that. Like, we are not going to put that genie back in the bottle because it's too powerful. And it does too many things that are actually beneficial. Okay? We are going to, I'm going to get one specific example. It's the entertainment space here in just a minute. But I want to start off with, like, just accept that it's going to happen. The other side of it, though, is all the things you're being told to sell you on it. And you've already seen some of it get wound back. Remember at the beginning of last year when Trump got inaugurated and a big push was being made and all the talk about it, and trillions of dollars are being invested in the United States by every country, and they're all coming here and they all want to make a deal with us and AI, blah, blah, blah. But the big promise was, what, AI is going to cure cancer. AI is going to cure cancer. I'm going to tell you, I think that probably worked better on 25-year-olds than 50-year-olds, because those 50-plus year-olds, how many times have we heard something was going to cure cancer in our lives? You know, Gen X, we grew up and we thought by now, like, we'd be flying around in hovercrafts and shit, jetpacks. Words of, was it Tim Wilson? Where the fuck is my jetpack, right? I ain't got no jetpack. What are you talking about? What's my jetpack? We've seen a lot of promises, and I think that's going to be the same with AI. AI isn't going to go away. And AI will continue to grow, and it will continue to get better, and it will have a greater impact on our lives, and it will take more jobs, but it's never going to be the thing that they're claiming, whether it's the person hyping it or the person fear-mongering over it in any reasonable time set. And I've been working with it since it became available at a consumer level. And the truth is, I was working in the space when I started the show 18 years ago. One of the companies I was an owner in was a company called Sirian. And Sirian was an optimization company. It did optimization for cellular networks. And what we were able to do with our software was predict where capital investments needed to be made in the network, which our actual value was more than that. It was to where you didn't have to do it yet. So we could tell somebody like AT&T, you need to upgrade this area of your New York City market now, because if you do not, in 6 months, that network's going to fall over. And over here in Jacksonville, Florida, where you are ready to make that investment, you won't need it for another 14 months at least. And when we first approached them with that, they told us to get fucked, basically. And then they called us and said, hey, our network's about to fall over. Like, we said 6 months, and like 4.5 months, they figured out we were right. And we think we can defer. Can you help us now? And that's how we established that customer, right? So that used early AI algorithmic prediction. That's how we did it. So I've been in this space a long time. And I can tell you that the improvement on things like Grok, ChatGPT, Google Gemini in 3 years is not that impressive. It's not that impressive. I love the technology. I use the technology. I get a lot out of the technology. It's not gotten as much. There is not an exponential rise in its ability, just its use and its integration. And so we have yet to have the equivalent of jumping, let's say, from 56K dial-up to 1.45 megabit DSL. We have not had that jump in that technology. So think about your internet experience. And if you some of you guys, your birthday starts with a 2, your birth year starts with a 2, you may not get this. Everybody else, you're going to get this. There was a time when you would decide, I want to go on the internet, right? And you type some shit in and you hit a button and you click the thing and it went, and if you were like 90% of Americans, you then heard the following: you've got mail, right? Because you're on AOL. And you could do things, but like, you would see this website and it had a picture, and the picture had a little bitty picture. And you click the picture and the picture was like, it is slowly loaded from the top of the screen down or the bottom of the screen up. And just one picture that wasn't even as big as your monitor, right? It would take 30 seconds to load sometimes. And if you did try to watch a freaking video, it was like max headroom jump cuts and it stopped, right? Like, you get that now, you're like, what's going on? And like, that was a Tuesday back then. And then we had all of these companies build out all this infrastructure, and they started deploying asymmetric DSL about 2001 in earnest. And this is when I knew, this is when I told everybody I knew, this is before I was podcasting, obviously. If you own stock in AOL Time Warner at the time, get fucking rid of it. Get rid of it. If you own anything touching AOL, adjacent to AOL, get rid of it, because they're going to go broke. Because my brother-in-law called me about 10 minutes after the DSL installer left his house and said to me, hey, Jack, I got this new DSL. It's really great. I said, yeah, I've had it for a couple of months, man. What's up? What do you need? He goes, I just have one question. I was like, well, go ahead. Why do you ask? He goes, he didn't know. The installer didn't know. No, he didn't know. He goes, how do I get to my AOL? And I went, oh, geez. Let me explain how this all works to you. Actually, you can go to AOL.com. You can log in and get your email and all and forward it and whatever. But like, you're like, that's not going to be a thing for you anymore. That's not going to be your portal anymore. Like, he didn't even understand. He believed at the time, as many did, AOL equals internet, right? When we went to DSL and then cable modem soon after and multiple high-speed options and fiber to the premise and fiber to the curb and all of this, and people started having routinely, you know, huge pipelines, having the speed capability on your network that before these days, like if you go back to 1999 and you were a company and you needed a big data pipe, something like an OC3 or something like that, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars a month was replaced, not completely replaced, because there's some, I don't want to get into the shit about how this all works. There's some things that the speed, raw number doesn't do on its own. There's something about dedicated space, dedicated bandwidth and stuff like that, that changes the calculation. But for all intents and purposes, a person sitting here with a $50 monthly service that used to cost $5,000 a month. What did that do for the internet? And understand, the internet no longer lives in your computer. It's on your phone. It's on your TV. Netflix is an example. Hulu, all the streaming services exist because of that change, right? Nothing has happened in AI to create that level of change yet. And it's going to take a lot more time, because the reality is when we went from that dial up to that fast internet, we knew all the things to do to get there. It was a very clear path to that place. The technology existed. It just needed to be adapted and built in scale to work at a consumer level, because it never was sold to the consumer before, because there wasn't a market for it. That was the only delay. The actual mechanical thing, we do not know all the things with AI yet. So it is going to be a while. And this is why I really believe that you need to be learning this technology now, because you are not going to recognize it later if you don't. I mean, I right now look at a post on Facebook or X or whatever, and I know a lot of you read it and you can go, that's AI. You know, in the Matrix, where is it Cypher, the guy that turns bad? Is he the one that does it, or is it a different guy? I think it's Dozer's little brother that says this, right? He goes, hey, you see all these numbers and strings. All I see is like blonde, brunette, and redhead, right? Like, he could see in the code, actually see the image the code was creating versus the code itself. When, as long as I've been working with this shit now, I look at a post. I don't even have to read it. I look at the structure and I go, AI wrote that. AI wrote that. I look at a video, AI made that video. It doesn't matter if it's a stupid video or not. I look at a video and it's a dog and their handler, and the dog doesn't even do anything that out of bounds. But I look at the dog and go, that's not a dog. That's not a dog. That's an AI representation of a dog. Now, I'm about to countermand that here in just a second, because We are getting past that one. But if you want to be able to recognize that AI behind the scenes is doing a thing, then you need to learn it now. So please take that seriously. If you don't take my course, because my course that I have right now anyway with AI is only for entrepreneurship. It's designed for entrepreneurship. But you need to work with it and learn about it. Look up artificial intelligence on my site. Listen to some of the shows I've done on it, some of the use cases for it. Because here's a use case. And this is something I don't think anybody realizes right now. People think that the reason Hollywood, and when I say Hollywood, I mean all mass media production, is shitting itself about AI is because AI is going to write all the movie scripts. That's going to take a lot longer than the real impact. I think we'll get to where AI will write pretty good movies. But that's not the real thing. Or AI is going to replace the actors. Maybe, but I think a hybrid approach is more likely. So the actor who you think is the reason, you know, your Tom Cruise's and what have you, right? Like, you think they are worried about their fortunes because, first of all, they already have their money, so they don't care. So it's not the writers, even though they're pitching a fit, but they're being told to pitch a fit. It's not really the actors, because they're going to play, and I'm going to explain soon how they will play a role for quite a time to come. It's the giant apparatus that is the movie industry that you don't see, that is shitting its pants. And I thought of this weekend when I had a thought to myself, because my son and I were talking about Spaceballs 2, right? The quest for more money, right? That is in production. The filming's done. The filming was done last year. It was finished. It only took a few months to film it. It's coming out in 2027. Basically, they wrapped up filming, I think, November last year. And it's going to take over a year in post-production work. All the editing and all piecing it together and getting it all ready to go out and be marketed to the world. That's what AI is going to replace. And there are billions and billions of billions of money-sucking entities within that. There are the people that sit behind the scenes and do all the editing and everything, right? But there's the people that make all the shit for that. Like, there's more money in post-production total cost than there is in filming. Now, if you have a giant super megastar in it who's getting $50 million for the movie or something, then that part you might have to back out. But when you look at the total cost of shooting the film versus producing the film, post-production, that's where the money is. That's where there's a huge amount of, like, my brother's uncle's cousin's company shit going on, just like there is any place where there's that kind of money. And there's people now making these little short movies from scratch, and they're turning out in a day what it would take Hollywood a month with teams working on it. And people say, well, they lack soul, the storyline sucks. This is all prototype. This is all prototype. This is how I see a movie being made in the future. Somebody's still going to write it. They'll probably use AI as an assistant in writing it. They probably definitely would use AI for, like, character development, especially secondary and tertiary characters. Because, like, when you actually create a novel or a movie or a screenplay, every character in it that's not a complete, like, unimportant NPC, random extra walking in the background that has any real impact on the movie, you create a whole backstory for them, even if you don't use it all. And you do this before you actually create the entirety thing. Who are they? Where are they from? How did they grow up? What's their family like? What are the intrinsic characteristics, and how did those intrinsic characteristics get there? Do they have a character trait, like somebody that always taps their foot or always has a bourbon at the end of the day? Stuff like that. You create, like, this cast, and then you build the story with the cast. I think AI will speed that up. But where it's really going to speed things up is they're going to be able to do things like, you get your actors to do about 20% of the acting that they normally would do. This forms a baseline with the AI agents that are building it, so that the scenes they never shot can be produced with their inflection, with their voice, with their passion, with their soul. At least enough to trick the person sitting in the theater watching it. and you end up with the speed going crazy. Yeah, Jake is making a point. I don't have to beat him up today, right? Just look at the credits. All those peeps doing super tech application for the movie. Lots of work to manipulate the final product. Yes. Again, just think about this. They filmed this show, this whole movie. The people have been waiting decades for it, by the way. I know some of you don't give a fuck about Spaceballs 2. Those of us that do. Those of us that were kids when we saw Spaceballs the movie, you know, we're grandpas now. We are so looking forward to sitting down with our – and those of us who were kids when it first came out, like teenagers, then we showed it to our children who are now in their 30s, and then we're a grandpa. I am looking forward to sitting down with my son and my grandson and watching Spaceballs before we watch Spaceballs 2. I am totally looking forward to that, right? But there's that kind of anticipation. Over a year to edit and put together a film that took about 90 days to film? Yeah. This is interesting. Tugger says, the movie industry union's got to be shitting their pants. Yes, but do you know what's going to happen? This won't change inside the system. Private companies are going to start producing Hollywood-level movies faster, quicker, and better than Hollywood. This is the death of the whole fucking thing, as you know it. So death is not really gone. It's a transformation. This is a complete transformation of the entire entertainment sector. Music, like, we might actually have music videos again that are actually good. And the guy that wrote the song might actually sing the song. And it won't be Nashville that does it. Or, you know, it won't be L.A. that does it or New York that does it. Most of the made famous people in music can't fucking sing. Now, that's hard to believe. We used to have people that were mainstream artists that could fucking sing. That blew you away with their raw talent. Steve Perry from Journey, anyone? I mean, my God. That dude's voice, like, chills when you hear him. But and he could do that a cappella in a stadium with 25,000 people screaming, and it still gave you chills. There are lots of extremely talented musicians and performers and actors, and what they lack is access. It's gatekept. One of the big contributions AI will make in the next 10 years will not be curing cancer, though it may help with research and development in that. It's going to transform entertainment as an industry. And instead of replacing humans with AI, it's going to kill the fucking gatekeepers that tell you what talent looks like instead of letting you judge it for yourself. Because I know I'm going to upset a bunch of people right now. And if my granddaughter was listening, I'd be in trouble for a fucking year over what I'm about to say because she loves her. But to me, Taylor Swift is a perfect fucking example. If you take away all the bullshit around Taylor Swift, she looks like a skinny, drag teenage boy at a Sunday talent competition. She can't sing. She can't dance. She's flat as a board. She's got no rhythm. It's all an illusion. And as long as you keep the illusion intact, you tell people what they like and they accept that they like it. Okay? That's where we're at today. YouTube was really kind of the first crack in that because you could now, if you're a good musician, just play music for people. But that has limited effect. When we are going to be able to have people see things, hear things, and view things, where again, the person, why would you do that all when AI could just do it all for you and fake because people actually care about what they do? And it's going to take to really make it, I think, in the way going forward is if you want people to buy into more than this is just an AI created thing and you accept it as that, then they're going to have to know the person behind it. And that's always been the most powerful thing. That's always been the most powerful thing is the person. The person, the real person. And that's why you've seen that like some of the people with the most loyal fans, not the largest number, the most loyal, they're very open whether musicians, actors, doesn't matter, authors, what have you. The ones that like come out and say who they are, what they think, what they really feel, the ones that are personal, the ones that actually answer, you know, occasionally, at least on social media or a fan mail or something like that, hey, thanks, I appreciate that, and it's really them, that's going to become more and more powerful. And I'll tell you what else is going to happen. Hollywood's propensity to end things very stupidly, that's going to change. That's going to change. You know what I just saw? Who here, just, you know, say me in the live chat if this would apply to you. When you saw Titanic the first time, the end of Titanic, where one of the most horrible humans in anything ever rose, you know, when she throws away the multi-million-dollar piece of jewelry that she could have left to her family for a dude she banged, you know, 60 years ago or 80 years ago or whatever it was, right? But at the end, when this guy, she's so in love with, you know, for like a day, right? Drifts off into the cold water and dies, and she's floating on the big fucking door. And 5 seconds after the guy fucking dies, here comes the rescue boat to get her, right? How many of you thought, that fucking door's pretty big. Two people could have fit on that door, right? Mythbusters, I don't think Mythbusters did it when they were together. I think Adam Savage did it on Tested. Somebody out of that group did the math, and based on the size of the door and what it was, proved like it was totally possible for two people to sit up on top of that, right? Somebody just made the new ending of Titanic. Jack's in the water about to pass out, and he wakes up, and they pull him up, and they get rescued together. They just changed the end of the fucking movie. I think that's going to happen. I think if there's a place for this. It's the Star Trek universe, because Kurtzman is an idiot. I don't want to turn this into a pop culture podcast here at the end, but if you know who Alex Kurtzman is, like, there's a lot of Trek fans that we'd like to see him do hard time for what he's done to the friend. Like, anything now is going to be able to be rebooted, because if you have enough source material, then you can use it to make new things. And that's where the actors are getting pissed, right? Because they're going to be like, hey, but you're using my name, likeness, voice to create this new thing. So there's going to have to be a legal structure for this if it's going to be done profitably. Now, if it's just going to be people doing it for shits and giggles on their own, it's going to be impossible to stop, right? I mean, it's like nobody wants to learn anything. If you're 45, 55 years old, somewhere in that range, maybe even a little bit younger, then you should remember the days of like Napster and the first torrents and what was the one I used? LimeWire, right, for music, like – we live in a world now you can never make anything go away. You can never make anything be taken down. You can never stop anything. It's impossible. So people are going to be like making new versions of like all the movies and all, especially anything with a cult following, whatever, and putting it out for free for shits and giggles. And the technology to do that will get better. And so we're going to have to realize about AI. This is why I talked about all this and got a little off the mark, I guess. We have to stop speaking about AI in a monolithic way. It is now just a technology. Each area is its own niche with the application of that technology. In other words, social media like X or Facebook works with something that's similar in social media like YouTube, but they're drastically different technologies. But when we look at email is not social media, right? It's email, but it's all enabled by the internet and by things like TCP/IP, et cetera, right? So AI is just going to become like this new layer of technology that just like we take two different websites and make them work together because one does one thing better than another one does. AI will be wrapped into all the technology. It's already in your search functionality. Brave Search has Ask, right? And then, you know, Google has Gemini integrated into it. I don't know what Yahoo's doing because nobody fucking uses it, but whatever, right? Like, you have it being integrated into Windows, right? You have it integrated. It's on Amazon now. Everybody has their own AI-named thing, right? Like, it started out with, like, Siri, right? And Alexa. But neither one is really AI. They're just voice activated tech. But now you got, like, on Amazon, they have a thing called Rufus. And I've actually found, I thought Rufus was stupid, right? But I found it to be useful. I remember I was asking, there was something I bought recently, and I just wanted to know, does it do X? I don't remember even what it was. Rufus knew. Rufus told me in 5 seconds. Rufus was able to see the answer when I could not see the answer, and then I bought the thing. It's going to be in everything. There's no getting out of it. It is not going to run all the traffic systems. It's not going to turn into Skynet, and it's not going to cure cancer. When we get – see, that's the other thing. We're not going to cure cancer. Like, we talk about all these things. This is something I want you to take away from today. Don't talk about a thing that's really 100 things like it's one thing. There is no such thing as a cure for cancer. There is a cure for, and I don't mean like it's really a treatment, it can always come back. I don't mean that. I mean, there are cancers that we do certain things and that cancer goes away and it, with very high probability, will not come back. There are some cancers we haven't gotten there yet. We can make it go away, but we know it's going to come back. We can push it into remission. We know it's going to come back. We can slow it down, but we know it's never going to go into remission, right? But each of those are separate and different in how we approach them. So we could come up with, let's say, a cure for cancer A and still not be able to do anything for cancer B. So all of these cures, if we actually get to them, because, boy, there's a lot more money in treating than curing things, but they'll come one at a time, piecemeal. And they'll all be done by humans working with AI. It's not like AI one day is going to, like, just figure out, hey, all you got to do is get 4 tablespoons of baking soda, 3 grams of, you know, stinging nettle dehydrated, 4 ounces of beef fat, and 3 lychees and 4 goji berries, and mix them up and heat them to a temperature of 161 degrees Fahrenheit and hold them there for 47.3 minutes, and then administer it at 3 milligrams to the kilogram of weight over 4 months, and the person will be cured. It's not going to do that. And I know most people would, if you explained it that way, they would be like, oh, yeah, no, yeah, it's not going to do that. But when they take in this bullshit about it's going to cure, that's how they actually think. Like, they'll just be this day, like the great announcement will come, ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok Coalition cures the cancer of the world, and it's not going to happen. Anyway, guys, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up here. I want to give you the item of the day real quick at the end. Dog, you're going to have to wait. I am not stopping to help you right now. So item of the day today, remember, you can always help us out if you do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is the Vivor vacuum sealer, and specifically the DZ260 vacuum sealer. This is a chamber vac machine. And I want to explain what that means if you've never heard me talk about these before. Basically, we have 2 ways to vacuum seal food. We have our old school style, like food savers and stuff like that. They use a bag that has channels on the inside of the bag that air can flow through. And that's so that when the machine clamps down and it pulls the air out of the bag, the air has a way to flow out. And so it pulls the air out of the bag, and then it uses heat to seal the bag. And, of course, that leaves you with a vacuum-sealed bag, except that so many times, as many of you have experienced with things like a food saver, that it doesn't. If there's any moisture that follows its way up the bag and the moisture gets to that seal, the seal will inevitably fail. That's the big one. And then those bags are either dog shit cheap and fail, or they're really expensive to get the good ones. And this machine and this type of machine uses a bag that's completely has no channels, no air channels. It's completely smooth on the inside and the outside. And the reason is the machine doesn't remove the air from the bag. It removes the air from the chamber, and the bag is in the chamber, so therefore the air in the bag is removed at the same time. So it completely evacuates the chamber, and then it seals, and then it lets the air back in, and then the bag kind of looks like it wraps around the food at the end, when it's really, it's only puffed up because it's stretched. There's no air in there at all. And this makes it highly reliable, but the other thing it does is it means that you can vacuum seal things that are liquid. And they are freaking awesome. I have an $1,100 vac sealer. It's made by a company called VacMaster. It's very good. This one costs what is it on sale for? $330. $330 today. Normally sells for $430. This is on sale for $330. I will not get rid of my vacuum sealer that I have. I won't, you know, like sell it or whatever and replace it with one of these because I already have it. If I did not have a chamber vac today and I wanted to, I would buy this instead. They are fantastic and they do a lot of good. First of all, if you go buy bulk food and then when you freeze it, it freezer burns and gets thrown away, you haven't saved money, you've lost money. So like one of the things we'll do, we'll go out to like a Costco or something and we'll buy a case of chicken thighs for well under $1 a pound and then break them into component parts and vacuum seal them. Or when I shoot a deer or something, obviously we use it. When I make sausage, obviously we use it. But I'll do things like I'll buy a whole chuck roll and I'll break it down and some of it will get ground and it all gets vacuum sealed. We do this with any of our blanched and frozen vegetables are put into here. But I also do things like with cooking. Like I'll make a marinade and put a small amount of it on a steak and in the bag with it, and I'll vacuum seal that steak. And in an hour, it's like marinating it overnight. We also make, for like parties and stuff in the summer, we make compressed boozy food, boozy fruit, I'm sorry. So like one of the things I did last year, I took a fresh watermelon from the garden, and I cut it up in pieces and I stacked them into the bag and I put a couple ounces of Grangala, which is like the lower cost version of Grand Marnier, which is like a orange cognac. And then we vacuum sealed it. And it was amazing. The texture of the watermelon gets more firm because it gets compacted and it pushes that booze into it. And now you've got this watermelon with this kind of like orange boozy thing. It was really cool. I've done a pear with brandy before as well. It's pretty damn cool to do all these other little kind of chefy things you can do with it, but it's also a food saving device and it's expensive. Yeah. $330 is expensive compared to like $100 food saver, but what's the cost of ownership, not the cost of the tool. Right. That's it's just like in business, right? It's not how much you earn, it's how much you keep that matters, right? So what's the cost of ownership? The bags cost less than half of equivalent thickness and size. So the bags alone make the machine, if you vacuum seal a lot of stuff in a year, the machine's paid for just on the bags. Plus it does all these other things. I have one warning. Do you know what temperature liquid boils at in a vacuum? Water boils at in a vacuum, do you? I'm not sure. But I know it's lower than like 100 degrees. I made this cream sauce one time, really great garlic onion cream sauce, and I made a bunch of it for a workshop. And it was warm, but it was cool. So I thought it'd be fine. So I put some in a bag. And I stuck it in my chamber vacuum machine and I hit the button. I close it. As soon as you close it, it starts going and it starts swelling up. All of a sudden I can see it boil. I pushed the button to stop it and it was gross. The whole inside. You want liquid that goes in it to be cold, not just cool, cold. Put it in the refrigerator first, cool it down. Someone here is going to tell me, oh, Jake says 180. No, it ain't 180, bro. It ain't 180. Maybe it's 80, but it ain't 180. It boils a lot lower. That stuff was maybe 100 degrees, maybe 100 degrees. It boiled a lot, and it made a big, sticky, nasty mess. I was afraid I was actually going to have to replace the heat bar. It was so gross, but I ended up cleaning it. Everything worked just fine. Anyway, definitely know that, but consider picking one up. Let's go ahead real quick and check questions, comments, et cetera. Second Light Farm, New York City has a higher budget than the entire state of Florida. True. True. So the fact that they're paying people $20 an hour to shovel snow is dumb. The fact that they're requiring all this ID to do it while screaming that requiring it to vote is Jim Crow 2.0 is even more ridiculous. Bad Hog 1776 question. Jack, sorry to even ask, but why don't you see no one asking this regarding the Epstein stuff? My question, where the fuck were these kids' parents during all of this? Why aren't they being asked? Well, the reality is that predators are really good at picking victims. And we keep saying pedophile, pedophile, pedophile. I don't want anybody to think I'm taking anything away from how awful all this shit is. But the primary modus operandi that Epstein was operating under was teenage girls. So it wasn't 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 8-year-olds, et cetera. I do think from what we've seen in the files, some of that shit was happening too. Those younger kids tend to be pulled out of international things using NGOs. Okay? It's a very sick, twisted thing. Or they're the kids of people that are in the street or have a drug problem or whatever. But it's real easy to say, like, parents should know where their kids are and what's going on and all, but there's a lot of 15, 16, 17-year-olds that take off and their parents don't see. They can't find them. And I think it was kind of like in the middle ground of that, at least what was going on in Florida. I watched a whole documentary on this when it first broke, and the girls that he was specifically tolerating or targeting were generally between the age of, it seemed like, 14 and 16, 17. And some of the 16, 17-year-olds might have easily passed for 22, which almost makes me wonder, like, in addition to all the other sick shit in there, is it some of these billionaires, like, does it turn them on just because it's illegal and I'm doing it anyway, and like a power flex or something? I don't know, because it's a pretty sick thing to me. I mean, if you think about people like we're talking about in this whole nasty mess, if they wanted sex, they could have professionals, prostitutes, call girls, call them escorts, whatever, and whatever they wanted, voluntarily show up, all adults. Like, there's a weird, sick, twisted predator side of this. But I do think that the lion's share of what was, like, let's say, the main product line of this sick fucks were teenage girls in the range of like 15, 16, 17. And that is pedophilia. But when we say pedophile, you know what we tend to think, little kids. And I'll wood chipper you for either one of those, but you may go, like, if it's a 9-year-old, you're probably going to the wood chipper a little bit slower. I don't know. That would be case by case individually, right? Because how many kids are out doing all kinds of shit their parents don't know about? And I think one of the things people do not understand about these sexual predators, they kind of see this in this weird movie level thing where everybody that's in the system was captured and taken. And like what he was actually doing, this sick fuck was actually doing, he would get one girl to bring him the next girl. I mean, that's how sick this was. So, like, they were winning over and controlling these people and making them comfortable, making them feel like they had something, like somebody cared about them. Like, they specifically, in that instance, were targeting people that were emotionally vulnerable. And that makes it worse, not better, by the way. Comment, Iran has everything to lose, has compiled too many things over the complied compiled too many things over the years. This is from the tram. Okay. All right. Sir. I don't know. We'll see. Comment, General Wesley Clark listed 7 countries. Iran is the last one remaining on the list. We has been toppled. I think there's a typo in there, but yeah, there is the famous list of 7 countries that we're supposed to take over. We toppled them. We didn't take them. Many of them are worse today. And worse not just for the people there, but worse for the agendas we have. It's like our government learns nothing from its failures. We're actually really good at destroying other militaries. There is not a military that stands toe-to-toe with the United States. And I am including China, and I am including Russia in that. There is not a military that can stand toe-to-toe with our capabilities. All of China's advanced shit they're so proud of is all shit we had 30 years ago, right? Well, some of the shit they have now that's all bad. Like, not only do we have it 30 years ago publicly, we had it 10, we had it 40 fucking years ago. Who knows what we actually have now? Trump kind of leaked the whole concept of the discombobulators. You might want to look that up if you want to know more. JC Solutions, real question. Why do we care what they're doing over there? We're never going to do that here. The rich won't allow it. I guess you're talking about Europe and the wealth tax on the unrealized gains. You don't think it can ever happen here? If you could time travel to Buenos Aires in 1970, it was literally called the Paris of the Americas. Look what happened to Argentina. Look what happened to Argentina. I tend to agree with your take, but didn't Denmark just show us how to do that? The rich won't allow it here. The rich created their own loophole there, didn't they? What do you think you would have believed me if I told you an avowed open socialist Muslim will be president, or not president, mayor of New York City if I had told you that 2 weeks after 9/11? What would you have said? Oh, Jack, you're stacking it. Okay, what if I told you that in 1995? If I told you in 1995, in 30 years, New York City is going to elect a Muslim mayor named Landami, who's Indian via North Africa into the country, as mayor, and he will be an open, avowed socialist to the point where the right description is actually communist. Not a Democrat we call a socialist, a guy saying, I am a socialist. You would have said, that can't happen. Do you know what's common in every place that was completely taken over and transformed from what it was into something totally different? Especially when that different thing was way worse. The commonality is somebody right before it happened said it'll never happen here. Be careful with that. I tend to agree with you, but I won't ever phrase it that authoritatively. Question from Jesse. What do you think of Nick Fuentes? Don't know jack shit about him really other than I've heard his name thrown around. Don't care. Not important to me. I don't even want to comment on what I think I might know because I'm probably wrong. 229 Mick, question. I saw RFK talking about glyphosate being used as a desiccant. Nothing that Crohn's and gluten intolerance became a thing when farmers decided to spray again before putting grain in the silo thoughts. This is a true story. This is correct. And this is not necessarily something that Trump is affecting with his order. The order is putting things in place to make sure the supply is there to be used. It has nothing to do with how it is used. And there is different ways that this herbicide is used. And I am not a Nazi on this, right? I am not like we should just banish glyphosate from the earth because there's actually herbicides that are way worse in many ways. Glyphosate has about a 6-month half-life. And the way you get rid of it is compost tea and UV light. We have some herbicides that have a half-life that's more like 50 years. That's a problem. And there are places, and I know big-time regenerative and permaculture-type people who will use glyphosate for specific applications at specific times for specific reasons, usually once in the establishment of a system, and they include people like, shocking, Jeff Lawton, Gabe Brown, Mark Shepard, and Ray Aculeta. Okay? I know people that will advocate its use in a very strategic way. Nick Ferguson talks about if you have perennial weeds that constantly invade your garden and you can't pull them out, one of the things you can do is like put a glove on and get the Roundup on the glove and just touch the leaves of the plants you want to die and don't spray it at all. Like, so the application matters, and it can be mitigated to the point of being fairly useful without it really being damaging, right? When is it applied? How is it applied? How long is it applied? But then it can also be used in a way that makes it far worse than anything it was ever intended to do. And this is when I got so much flack from so many of you people, and not only was I right, I became more right across time. I remember when I first started talking about this back in 2009, and I said, what farmers are doing, they go into the field of wheat or barley, any of these grain crops, and a few weeks before the combines are going to come and harvest it to make sure it's all dead and dry, they spray it with Roundup to kill it, as a desiccant. And they kill it, and then they harvest it. And that way they can schedule the harvest to the exact time they want. Oh, I heard that almost never happens. It's an expenditure you don't need to make. That's only done for emergency. And it is standard fucking practice at this point in way more than half of all grain grown in this country. Because for all the talk about GMO wheat and shit, usually it's not. There is no GMO wheat. Most of these other grains are not. It's corn that's genetically modified for this purpose, where it can be sprayed with, it's like soybeans. They have these Roundup Ready soy and Roundup Ready canola. They plant the plant, and when it's like just starting to establish, they spray the field with Roundup again, and the plant lives and the weeds die. Except the weeds are adapting. Right? So they keep having more and more problems. But the truth is, in that case, the amount of Roundup that ends up in the final product is bad, but it's somewhat mitigated. When you're spraying it 3 weeks before harvest, and then it's being stored in a nice, dry, dark area, because that's where you store your grain, you're eating literal Roundup like that. And we could put an end to that practice without the massive upheaval that I was talking about earlier about why we're kind of going to still need some of this stuff for a while. JC says, sorry, Jack, I was in seventh grade on 9/11. It's all right, man. There's people around that can tell you all about what things were like in the olden days, because they're not really that far back. I don't see any more questions here. Thank you guys for tuning in today. I'm going to wrap up now. Appreciate it. Sorry I was so late getting started today. Maybe a little bit off after a long weekend as well. But take care, guys. I appreciate you. And I will catch you tomorrow with another episode. Tomorrow, I don't know exactly what yet, but we're going to dig into something way more productive for use in our own lives. We're not going to do another current topic show.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar